The winger heads it away. And now here comes Kansas City. So dangerous in transition. Bia leads the break. Ahead for Shawinga. Here come the Current. And they score. End-to-end action. And the Current strike first. Shawinga 1-0.
What's good? Welcome to another episode of Diaspora United. I am Andre Carlisle here with my co-host Courtney Stiff. Courtney, how are you?
Itchy from the pollinating that's starting. Roasting because my parents won't turn off the heat and it's 73 degrees outside currently. So down bad. That's how I describe how I'm doing.
Okay. I'm sorry for that. Although I will say, the allergies really hit me too. They always seem to sneak up. I should be used to it, especially in this area where we really don't get any transition between like non-allergy seasons. Just like all of a sudden everything hits you right in the face. And that's been happening this week. And I'm like, oh yeah, I should have started my allergy medication like a week and a half ago.
See, I thought I was prepared because when I was sent to Dallas, I would go outside and be like, why is my throat itching? And I checked AccuWeather because they have like a daily allergy report. And everything I'm allergic to was high. And I was like, oh, this is like a small introduction. But then sitting at the Gotham game this weekend, I was like, I'm dying. So I was just sitting with a mask on my face being like, let's see I'm trying to breathe in the least amount of things I'm currently allergic to. Because I forgot about how I'm also allergic to grass pollen. And Red Bull is a grass arena, which is great for the players. Terrible for me and my allergies.
Yeah, it's always, I do this every single year though. I'm always like, what is wrong with me? Like my throat is scratchy, my nose is running, my eyes are, oh yeah, that's right, it's allergies. I don't know why. Every single time this happens, I'm always confused about it. Like what the hell is going on with me? And then I'm like, oh, that's right. You've got issues with nature. Oops.
Yeah, I stay beefing with Mother Nature, unfortunately. I thought we were best friends. Because I love the sun, but yet me and Mother Nature just beef on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's not fun. But all right, let's get into this episode. First, we're going to read a review because we appreciate when y'all rate and review the podcast. We ask that you do that, please. 5 stars, please. And also a nice message that also includes a dad joke because they're great.
Or a middle name for Andre.
Yeah,
both
I'm gonna skip
work.
That part because honestly, the dad jokes have been like on fire. Like y'all been killing it, and I've been enjoying all the. We get like an email like when a few people drop reviews kind of at once. We get an email with them in, and I just like cackle. It's just very funny to read like 3 or 4 reviews as they come in because y'all are really really funny with the dad jokes, and they get me every single time. And this one from Arthur Game is legit. I love it. The review is titled "Real Talk on the NWSL." I had to get past the initial part. So Arthur, just letting you know, I almost skimmed. I'm glad I didn't. Courtney and quote unquote Washington Heights, Andre. Interesting.
That's hilarious.
Have great chemistry and personality as they break down what's going on in the women's game. They bring much needed perspective and perceptiveness. My bad. And always make me laugh in the process. Also, did you hear the one about the 3 moles tunneling into the sugar factory? As they got closer, the first mole in line said, I smell sugar. Then the second mole in the tunnel said, I smell sugar too. And the one in the back said, I just smell molasses. That one got me. I'm not going to lie. That one got me more than it should have.
That one is, yes, that one is very, very good. I can't lie, though, the Washington Heights Andre made me laugh harder than almost anything.
No, it's all about molasses. I had to say molasses just because it sounds funny, but molasses is really how it's typed, but still, it's funny.
It is very funny, but also Washington Heights is funny because I live in New York, but you live in D.C., and so it's like also a funny play on words. You know, Washington Heights in the city.
Yeah.
It was very clever. Yeah. Two great jokes.
You like that? Yeah.
Well done, Arthur Game. Two great jokes.
Well done, Arthur Game. Thank you very much. And also, if y'all haven't left a review and want to, we would kindly very much appreciate it. Again, 5 stars and a dad joke and all that good stuff.
And we might and a middle read name it. For Andre.
And we might read it on the podcast. So in this episode, we are going to kind of go around a number of different things. So Maria Sanchez has requested a trade. We're going to talk about that situation and what the hell is going on in Houston. We're also going to talk about Mike Norris. Apparently he got the boot, but to the front office, ? In Portland. So we're going to talk about that. Then there was some nonsense between Millie Turner and Lauren James that we want to talk about, plus WSL refereeing on Myra Ramirez. We want to talk about that. Also, the WNBA draft and what was going on in the women's league in Brazil, because there's some absolute foolishness that happened. And we have some updates as of the recording of the podcast and want to make sure we are elevating that. So, Courtney, anything else before we get started?
Nope.
I guess we should start with this Maria Sanchez thing because it is absolutely hilarious, to be honest with you. Not necessarily hilarious from like a, haha, this club is really struggling, but also just like, remember that tweet they dropped where they say, y'all heard something? This is after they had that crazy comeback to beat Bay FC. And it looked like they played like good football for about 20 minutes, maybe 23 minutes. And they screenshotted a bunch of journalists and were like, or just media people, and we're just like, hey,
y'all heard something?
Yeah, correct. And ever since then, it's been pure chaos in Houston. They lost 3-1 to the Spirit, and now their main player, the one they dropped a bag on this offseason, $1.5 million, I believe, is the contract for Maria Sanchez. She requested a trade and said, no, I want this done like immediately by Friday. That's the end of the trade window in the NWSL, April 19th, Friday. First of all, before we even get to like what's going on, all of that, Courtney, what were your thoughts when you saw that like hit the timeline?
Well, we were in the middle of a mixed zone at Gotham because Gotham had their home opener this weekend and they did the little trophy presentation. So even though the game ended around like, what, 8-ish, there was still like so much, like they had post-game activities planned for the players and for fans who were in attendance. So, you know, that means like the mix zone was pushed back. All the post-game press conferences were pushed back. So all of a sudden we're in the middle of this mix zone. I think technically we like went in for one post-game and then like came out like one post-game press conference and then like came back out for the mix zone. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, this Maria Sanchez news dropped. For folks who don't know, Andre alluded to it, but just a short 4 months ago, Maria Sanchez signed a deal that is reportedly, it goes up to $1.5 million across 4 years if you add in her bonus, like the bonuses in the contract as well as a contract option year, because technically the contract she signed was through 2026 with a mutual option for 2027. So like in theory, across 4 years, if they take that option, it's up, it's worth $1.5 million with bonuses. She signed it as a restricted free agent, signed it in December, and it's actually almost, I don't know when she signed it, but they announced it December 18th. So by the time this podcast episode comes out, it will literally be 4 months minus one day that we're talking about it. And so to me, I was like, whoa. My second thing was, I mean, I don't want to say like, duh, but like I, as well as other people, have been talking about how recently Maria Sanchez has been deployed as a wingback. And she shouldn't. She should just be a pure winger because that's also what she's best at. And when you throw this much, like when you throw this much money behind a player, why would you then not play them in their most natural position? It's like, I can't make a basketball reference because I don't know as much about basketball or, well, basketball positions. But it's like, oh God, it basically is just like signing a star player and then playing them out of position, which is like, no, normally you sign that star player, put this all this money around them or money behind them, and then you build the team, your tactics, everything around them because they're the future of your club. So the fact that truly since the moment that Houston had that tweet, it has been very down in the mud for them. And I am surprised that this is happening, but also at the flip side, when you look at the writing on the wall with everything going on with Houston, I'm also not that surprised. Although I don't think, I mean, the trade deadline is Friday at midnight. I would be very surprised, honestly, if a trade goes through, because players signed, technically every player in the NWSL has, like, Maria Sanchez's contract isn't actually with Houston. It's actually with the NWSL. Like, her signed contract is with the NWSL. And I can say that I've not seen her contract, but I've seen other previous NWSL contracts when I used to do some reporting for my old job at CNBC. And so basically the only way that she can get out of Houston before Friday is if her and Houston decide to mutually terminate her contract. She gets released, picked up on the waiver wires, and then someone signs her to a new contract. Or she gets traded and her new contract go to another team, which outside of Seattle, maybe I'm going to say Utah might. There's not a lot of teams that can pick up her contract.
Yeah.
Like a contract of that gravitas.
This is where I want to come in and talk about kind of the larger picture of the mechanisms within the NWSL and not having transparency. This league has, especially for a soccer league, I know that if you're an American-based fan, you are very much familiar with these mechanisms when it comes to sports salary cap and luxury tax, even though that's technically not what they call it, but blah, blah, blah. You're used to all these financial restrictions on squad building within a team. And those don't exist elsewhere, especially in soccer. There may be like a thing or two, but typically they call them like a budget, not necessarily a salary cap, right? So it's not mandated by a higher body, or the league itself, which is not the case in the NWSL.
Or there's like spending limits.
Right.
For how much you make the previous year.
Right.
To basically keep your club afloat.
Yeah. And the problem that I have with the NWSL at the moment with all of this is that it really hurts reporting, and it also really hurts, like, in moments like these, when it comes to squad building and actually trying to figure out what can and can't be done by certain teams. We really have no idea where teams are with regard to their cap. We can guess if you sign or have a lot of high profile, likely high salary players, you're probably not going to be in on the Maria Sanchez sweepstakes if there is one. And again, this is a very difficult trade to pull off, so we'll have to see what happens by Friday. But like, you can maybe rule out certain teams based on like who they sign with a similar big contract. You know, the cap did go up, but it didn't go up enough to where you can commit like $2 million to two players. It's not really how it works. So like, or I guess you could, but the other players would be on super low salaries. And right now, that's not the case of any team that I'm aware of. So that part really frustrates me in terms of trying to figure this out. I wrote a piece today that was just like, this would be cool if she could go here, but I have no idea. And I'm kind of with you. I'm thinking Seattle might, because of all they lost. And in terms of they really replaced those players with rookies and players from overseas who are kind of young and don't have the type of gravitas yet to command a large salary. And then also Utah, who should have a lot left over from all of their bonus financial mechanisms to build a team that they had coming in as an expansion team. Apart from that, I don't really know where other teams are. I think Louisville maybe could finagle something, but also you're looking at a trade, which means either a draft pick, either some money, or either a player is going, and a player would be super tough to send because Maria Sanchez doesn't want to be in a place for another team to turn around and be like, hey, how about you go to Houston because we want her? That's a lot to do. And I hope that that doesn't happen, especially if it's blindsiding a player. So this is very complicated, but also I'm intrigued because there are a number of teams I would like to see her on.
Yeah. And I just want to clarify, like, I think the reason potentially why we're kind of throwing out the teams is when you have a reported 1.5 million contract, which also at the time was the biggest contract the NWSL had seen, it was very quickly broken by Mallory Swanson's contract for her to stay in Chicago. And I don't know if that was officially broken by Sophia Smith's contract, even though technically season per season, Sophia Smith, from reporting from The Athletic, is the highest paid player in the league. And so we're just throwing that out of, I think, context of, we truly don't know what any of these players are making outside of a minimum, which is important, which I think the minimum is somewhere around like $35,000 a year or something, which is why when Claire Watkins tweeted, like, this is an important moment also for media when talking about this reporting, because we don't know how much any of these players are making. And I was like, they honestly all could be making $35,000 in donuts for all we know, because we don't. But yeah, I think this situation is, and having talked to other journalists who are a bit more in the know, it's just like also kind of unfortunate to me that like the everything that has gone so wrong with Houston has soured so much in just 4 months, really. Like, she was like Sanchez, and also like I think something that is also important is that Sanchez is, or was at the time, a restricted free agent, which means she could go, like she could go talk to other clubs, but Houston had the right to refuse or match another club's offer to keep her at the club, as opposed to regular free agency, which is like you go talk, you can go wherever you want. If you want to negotiate a higher contract, maybe at your current club, you bring another offer back being like, so-and-so is going to pay me X much, and see if your club will match it if you want to stay there. But like, it, you know, it's not this, it's not the same thing. Or sorry, her negotiating this contract wasn't necessarily the same as like what a Roosevelt or an Emily Sonnet or a Crystal Dunn. And I'm just saying that because I'm thinking about Gotham players off the top of my head, like negotiated these salary or sorry, negotiated their new contracts as. So yeah, it's just like kind of insane to me that at the time having a legendary signing, a landmark deal in the NWSL at the time has fully soured so much.
And maybe a hint of that was in the article on ESPN that Jeff Kasuf put out.
And Jeff Kasuf broke the news.
Yeah, Jeff Kasuf broke the news. I want to read this statement because I think what you said is very important. The restricted free agent piece is very important. This does not mean that she was a true free agent, as in I can choose to either take less money somewhere else or go wherever I want. She was still, as you mentioned, it was still really up to Houston to decide, are we going to pay her this money to keep her here, which they did. Pay her a lot of money, which was great, but also it wasn't a true, like, it wasn't really fully her decision when you're a restricted free agent, okay? So those are, that's the mechanism. So I think with that backdrop, you can kind of see that this is, yes, I'm sure that there's frustration given with the start, given with whatever the hell Fran Alonso was trying to do, and given that a star player wants out already. But this little piece, and it's a quote within the article, says, reached by ESPN on Sunday, a Dash spokesperson provided the following statement. Maria Sanchez is under contract, a choice he made in free agency at the end of 2023. That ain't the way to handle that.
Yeah, it's not great when you give like a boy, like in one sense, like I understand that response of like, that's like the most quote unquote corporate response you can give, but also like, there was nothing also that, you know, I know they couldn't exactly say like, hey, we're trying to come together with Maria Sanchez to find a solution, or like, we're trying to make sure that she is, or we're trying to remedy this situation so she feels her most comfortable at the club and the club supports her, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, there was nothing of that. It was just like, she signed a contract in free agency and she signed a contract. And it was like, oof. On the oof monitor, that's like the biggest oof. Like, that's
a big old oof.
Not a great thing to say.
Yeah. So I guess, like, let's assume, let's just play a quick game. Let's assume that by Friday, end of day, or I guess at least 11:59 p.m. on Friday, let's assume that a move happens. Where do you want to see her go? Like, what team would you be most interested in? Maybe like your top two, if you have them, like teams that you'd be interested in seeing her play with.
In the NWSL or anywhere?
Yes, in the NWSL.
Oh, okay. I was like, I don't know. So maybe they terminate her contract and she's like, I'm going back to Tigres.
Y'all Tigres fans would love that.
I mean, objectively, I would like for her to go to Gotham. Is that possible? Likely not. But like, you asked. Of course, I'm going to want to see her play up close. Right. Like, I'm going to see, I want to see her. I want to see all the great players right in front of me every game. But realistically, Midge Purse's ACL tear, unfortunately, and now she's on SEI, I will say, like, Gotham does need another winger. However, I don't think that's going to happen. So.
Modicum of reality.
A modicum of reality. I do think she would, it would be beneficial for her to maybe go somewhere like Seattle. I think the, I don't know, like, if it's Laura Harvey not wanting to play a player like Ziara King or something like that. I do think that she, it could be fun to see her in that team. But also, I'm like, I don't know. I kind of think about the flip side, unfortunately, of like, what is the reality of her joining a team and them also potentially putting her somewhere like random, like if she's a wingback again, or maybe
I don't know if there's another coach in the league that would do that, if I'm being honest.
I mean, I would hope, but like, honestly, the NWSL, unfortunately, at times anything is possible.
I think with her, we're past that. Plus, she just wanted to bounce because of, you can assume, she's not really happy playing wingback. So
I think spiritually it had, no, maybe I'll save this for our offline conversation. But yeah, I mean, I think her joining a team like Seattle could be fun, especially thinking about how well Seattle normally does off of beautiful floated in crosses, thinking to Bethany Balser's forehead. She could reunite with one Juan Carlos Amoros. Even though it's not possible, but like, also if you want, like, I'm thinking about like, okay, I want to go to somewhere where like, I'm potentially, maybe at this point she's not feeling supported, let's say, or something like that. Also going to a club where like, I hope she feels supported and safe and is enjoying playing. So maybe that's potentially some familiarity, but yeah, I would probably say maybe a Seattle. I wouldn't want to send her to Louisville. I think what Louisville has in their front three is really, really good and should not be tinkered with. So yeah, I know you asked for two teams, but I guess I would just say Seattle.
Yeah.
What about you?
Seattle is an interesting one. And to be honest, if I had any faith in Laura Harvey not playing struggle ball, I would be happy with it. I know
maybe she frees them up to not play struggle ball, because
that
you
have hasn't really been how that works, because like, she ignored Elise Bennett, she ignored Ziara King, and those are players who can get in behind and do things. And Maria Sanchez is I believe, even more of a risk taker than those players. And I don't think she's going to allow that. I think she allowed Pino to kind of do what she does, because Pino isn't really going to get behind. She's going to stay pretty close within the shape. But she's going to find space and then deliver balls into the box from out wide, whereas Sanchez is going to not do that. She's going to be a lot more active, take a lot more risks, especially high up the pitch along the back line. I just don't think, or testing the opposition's back line, I just don't think that at the moment Laura Harvey has not shown that she really values those types of players. So I'll be worried about that aspect of it. I think it would be perfect for Jordan Heidema, and I think it'd be perfect for Bethany Balser. I just don't see Laura Harvey doing it, or it working out well if she does go there. Mine, I have two, and I know you mentioned Louisville, and I kind of feel you, but also I think Raylan Turner is not getting enough service from the two wingers that they've been playing, and that can change, obviously, new coach, new system, all of that. But I think Maria Sanchez and Raylan Turner would be very interesting to watch together. But my two are really Utah. I think Allie Sentner can move and play as a striker. She likes to kind of make runs to her left anyway. It's kind of a natural thing she does, and she scores a lot of goals from that left side, which kind of allows her to naturally combine with a player like Maria Sanchez and float, so they'd always be so much close to one another. So I kind of like that idea, and Utah has to figure out a way to attack this, not just, hey, rookie, save us. And
well,
right,
that's,
now that's kind of,
that's my concern for them. Is well, that's
why I think they would love Maria Sanchez, because they'd have versatility finally. They'd have somebody else to get the ball and attack, and so I think that would work. But my big one is, and this is evil, and I honestly do not think, like, financially, I feel like this is probably a stretch, especially because I think they would more than likely have to make a trade to alleviate some salary to make it happen. But North Carolina.
Absolutely not.
Could you imagine?
Ebony's having the greatest time listening to this podcast. Because of you.
Could you imagine Maria Sanchez? No. Just across the pitch, especially when Caroline gets back. Could you imagine? Could you imagine a forward line that had, or at least a front four that had Maria Sanchez on the left, Ashley Sanchez central, Caroline on the right? I'm just saying, it's the type of evil that I need in my life.
It is evil. I will just say about Utah, because they're in so much flux. Also, I don't want her to go to a place where we're like, we don't know how Utah's going to play every single week.
Well, also, I don't want her wearing America First on her shirt, but hey.
Oh, that too. But I also think about the club environment. I do think going to also an extremely stable environment like in North Carolina could work really, really well for her, especially thinking about how they want to play and really be possessive and have like really creative runs and a lot of fluidity. And she would do really, really well if they play Narumi to play in balls behind or a nice slip ball. Wow.
Yeah.
That would in fact be elite.
It would be a problem.
However, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, me either.
I mean, if I was just vibing, like vibe wise, I would send her to like Orlando. Like, go play with Barbara Branda.
I mean, everybody.
Go cause so much chaos. Or honestly, vibe wise, well, no, Chicago is going to at times sit back and defend. But like going forward. Also, that would bring, I think, Sandra Herrera a lot of joy. But yeah, I think the suffer balling thing about Seattle is fair. It's just like, I mean, and really this is all we're doing. It's just like all speculation right now. But unfortunately, I can't lie, the most confident that something is going to happen before Friday. I think if maybe there was like an extra week, maybe, but like thinking about A, the NWSL's fax machine, which goes burr all the time. But honestly, I think it's also more than likely that like, I mean, maybe she's just done with the NWSL, stays till the next window opens in the summer and then goes somewhere else, which is unfortunate, but like.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of got the vibe that she wants to stay in the States. She kind of moved to Houston to be closer to family and those sorts of things. So if those things are still important, I would assume that she's going to stay. But I mean, see, honestly, we'll see. I mean, it's not like Houston hasn't kind of messed up to where players have wanted to completely leave the continent before. So Ebony Salmon, right? So like, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Okay, we got to move on because we have another big breaking piece of news that happened. Obviously, won't be breaking by the time you're listening to this, but it did break, and we're going to talk about it. Mike Norris, the former, I guess he was not interim, real head coach of Portland, has been... apparently, there's been a restructuring is the way that Portland is framing this. And some of this is very funny. So I'm going to kind of read the restructuring tweet. That's from Meg Linehan, who broke this news. I saw it first from her on the timeline. It says, Thorns FC are restructuring their technical staff, moving head coach Mike Norris to a new role as technical director. Rob Gale will be interim head coach, and the team will conduct a global search for a new head coach. Do you think that global search is going to be like sticking their head out the window and being like, hey, anybody remember Mark Parson's number?
No, I don't think. I think they saw what happened at the Sphere, and they were like, we're good. Sorry,
apparently
Mark Parson's.
Apparently, Portland fans wanted back, so...
It just didn't work. Yeah, but, like, I also want Antonio Conte back at Chelsea. Like, I don't know.
You do? Okay, we're not going to get into that.
I was like, we're not going to get into that. Because it's better than what's currently going on, or could be. Anyway, I think this move is very funny. And that's like the only way I can describe it is funny. Also, the fact that Portland plays Houston go to Portland this weekend is also hilarious. Like, fundamental, like, that's funny.
A mid-off. The most mid-off of mid-offs.
It's not even like what's going to happen on the field. It is the two competing narratives is going to make that match hilarious.
Yes, agreed.
Either way, it's going to be hilarious. Yeah, this move was funny. One, I thought, oh, does this mean, and like, for someone like Karina LeBlanc as GM, you kind of think of a GM's role, like, obviously it's recruitment and things like that, but technically, at least the way we've kind of seen it throughout American sports, throughout soccer, is the GM has not only a role in, like, has a role in recruiting, development, like, even at times we've seen, not to the team's benefit, often to their detriment, like style of play, etc., along with all the other things on the business administration side. And so it's very, very funny to me that like LeBlanc is like essentially like splitting her role in half, which I know that it's like not exactly that, and her role is very like, I'm assuming her role day to day is also just a lot more like sporting administration as opposed to this technical director role is what we think of as almost more of a traditional sporting director at a lot of big clubs, especially when you think of like clubs across Europe. So yeah, it was interesting. I'm not like, I know that doing some Googling on Mike Norris that he's had, or he's like kind of had experience like helping players develop, etc., looking more like holistically and broad brush at how a team is doing. But also I'm like, this to me is just kind of weird, like kind of cut your losses and move on.
I think like that's the interesting thing for me. Also because a technical director role feels like a kind of a role that's an upward move. Like is joining a front office where like you are in charge of some measure of like player development, player recruitment, player something. Like you're making boardroom type of decisions, I suppose, which is interesting. And so also I want to read this quote. Like first, I'm going to say shout out to Karina LeBlanc. She's been trying in this role, and like this is a tough job to have. And there's also been a lot of flux with the club itself from a ownership perspective, right? So like there's a lot, and rightly so, Merritt needed to get rid of the team, but that changes, a lot of things have to change. So it's been difficult. But I also want to read this quote because I think it's funny. apparently, Karina LeBlanc was speaking to Meg Linehan, and one of the quotes is, "How do we move forward with being the standard that people are used to with the Thorns? One of the key roles identified was a technical director position." And I love how that kind of comes across as like, we have an idea. Most clubs have a technical director.
Why was that? We have an idea.
What happened?
We have an idea. That is actually very funny. But yeah, I don't expect them to go for Mark Parsons again. I think that is a very rushed decision. And also one thing that Karina LeBlanc said in that article was that we want to get this correct, which means we will take as much time as we need to. If I'm being honest, I also like don't know who they would go for.
And also how much time they got.
How much time do you have?
She said, but how much time do they actually have?
Yeah, I mean, if you're Portland and you want to make the play, I mean, it's April, right? Like, the season ends in November. Lots and lots can change by now or by the end. There's also a whole Olympics and an Olympic break in the middle. But, yeah, I'm also thinking about, like, I don't know, like, the best managers in, like, right, like, I feel like Portland sees themselves as a premier club in the women's game, so they're going to want to get one of the best, if not the best, coaches around. Well, it's like Emma Hayes is going to the U.S. Women's National Team. Heraldis is going to the Spirit. I personally don't think you should take from any other team in England.
Joe Montemurro is looking for a job.
I would absolutely die if Joe Montemurro takes over Portland after coaching a Juventus side that lost the Scudetto for the first time in a long time after winning like a trillion in a row to Roma, and them yet again likely going to lose the Scudetto to Roma after they just got beat this past weekend 2-1. So I would cackle. Like, I would fundamentally laugh. But I think the number one thing for this coach is they're going to need to find a way. And I mean, to be fair, it's not like very hard, right? This isn't going to be a hard task, but I think it's going to be a deeply important task of getting the best out of Sophia Smith. We know that she just signed a brand new deal. She's the highest paid player, apparently season by season in the NWSL, reportedly. Very much has spurned any really going to Europe. She said that she wants to stay in the league, but whoever they hire is going to have to get the best out of her. Now, is that actually hard? Because she's very good at footballing activities. No. But is it something that's currently happening? Also no. So I think that's like probably going to be number one. If I'm being honest, I think a good coach to take over is, since Wolfsburg seems to be in the mud, I think Wolfsburg's coach. Look, I said I wanted Sophia Smith to go to Wolfsburg and learn under one Alexandra Popp. However, if the Wolfsburg coach wants to take an American vacation, I think that's a great hire. Or someone like Hacken.
I am so kind of amazed right now. And I guess when you do a podcast with somebody for multiple years, I was just looking up Tommy Struth, the head coach of Wolfsburg. I was just looking up to see about his contract, because I was like, that would be fascinating, because the style of play they want to play could really benefit run the NWSL, the style of play he's been trying to play. Yeah. And if you're losing Lena Oberdorf and you're losing a bunch, I think Eva Pajor is going to Barcelona.
Yeah, that's what reports say.
Yeah, there's a lot of talent that you're losing, and I haven't heard of anybody coming in. I'm sure they'll try, but you can't just really replace those players. And so he might want to just skedaddle if Wolfsburg can't keep their best talent. Taking over at Portland would be a very good move, and I would like to see it.
Yeah, I personally would like to see it. I'd be fascinated by it. But yeah, like I have no idea who they're going to hire. Even though, yeah, honestly, I have no idea who they'd hire. But yeah, the entire situation is just like kind of weird. That's like kind of how I feel about it. It's like, it's kind of weird. But yeah, Portland, unfortunately, is currently having lots and lots of problems. And I did not think with the losses or the players that they lost in the offseason that they would be having such issues. And yet they are.
I think their main problem has stemmed from the fact. Mangez. Say that again.
There's no Emily Mangez.
But I don't think that's it.
No Natalia Kuika.
Kuika is definitely.
No, I actually pointed my hat to Kuika. No, Kuika. I was like, she was secretly deeply important to them, and that's why things aren't working.
Yeah, no, I think Kuika is a reason as well, because they have had trouble defensively with players being able to get in behind them and test them. But I think the biggest thing is, I think they misread Jessie Fleming's profile. I don't think she's I think she can be a number eight in a different like European style system, but I don't think she's a number eight in the NWSL. And I think they have a lot of players who want to do similar things. Like the last lineup he put out, it was Sam Coffey and it was Olivia Moultrie and Hina Sagita as the midfielders. Nah, bruh. When you put Olivia Moultrie with Jessie Fleming, nah, bruh, they want to kind of do the same things. They try to float around. They try to make those forward passes that are really nice, but you need somebody else to do a different layer of work. And that's what's not happening there. And I think they really miss Crystal Dunn and they really miss Rocky Rodriguez.
Yeah, I fully agree. I fully agree on that. Yeah. Maybe we'll do a deep dive into it later. But yeah, I don't think Jessie Fleming, unfortunately, is adjusting to the league in which we thought. But yeah, also like, and I mean, look, I would love to get one-on-one with any of these European players players who have been playing in Europe for the last few years and them coming to the NWSL and like how they feel after 5 games. Like, just tell me how you feel adjusting to this league.
How's your body holding up? Have you ever been this tired?
How is your body holding up, okay? Because I was like, I don't think a lot of you were prepared for the crunchy nature that happens in the NWSL, but also the speed of play. And not even talking about, like, being transitional, but, like, NWSL players are faster than
chase.
I was like, I think NWSL players are faster than your average European soccer player. And on top of that, that means also when they're pressing you, it's going to happen a lot faster. Yes.
Yeah.
But yes. Andrea, anything else about Portland?
No, let's get on to some random NWSL observations before we move to Europe and talk about some things. So I know you were at the Gotham game versus Kansas City, and we're very excited to talk about a couple things. So
I have a lot of feelings on my heart about this Gotham-Kansas City game. One, I saw Vlaco, and I'm not joking, the way his collar looked reminded me of like the berries and cream person. Like, you know, berries and cream? Like I saw it, and I got an immediate flashback, and I was like, whoa. The league is fundamentally not prepared to have an attacking duo of a Temo Chiwenga and Villa Zanarato.
That run was ridiculous.
Chiwenga's run was ridiculous. The two of them are absolute menaces in the best way. I saw Villa Zanarato bully everyone but Bruninha, and I think she did not bully Bruninha because they're Brazilian teammates. Also, she was just never, to be fair, like, also never on, like, wherever Bruninha was. The two of them actually were not super close together for the majority of the match. It was kind of funny because I was, like, waiting on being like, oh, look at this Brazilian matchup, because those are one thing that, like, I'm always looking for. But instead, it was almost like opposite, like, magnets facing the same direction with the same magnetic pull, which means they just were not coming close together at all, which was funny. The way Gotham set themselves up with having Emily Sonnet making forward runs, which I fundamentally don't understand why you would want a player like Emily Sonnet to do that. And also why coaches keep asking her to do that. I've seen Juan Carlos ask her to do it twice. I've seen Twyla Kilgore ask her to do it. And I'm like, objectively, why? Also, when you have Crystal Dunn on the field and could be playing that position, why? I will also say, literally it's 22 minutes in. And it's because I tweeted it out. We're like 22 minutes into the match. And Kansas City did something, and Juan Carlos, and I'm laughing because it was happened right in front of me. Juan Carlos turned around and pointed at Jenna Nyswanger, Crystal Dunn, and Lynn Williams and said, go warm up. Like, literally, he, like, something happened, he turned around, and he was like, you three, go. Like, an immediate reaction. And I was like, honestly, if he could, he probably would have given them 10 minutes and put them in the game before half. I was very surprised because every time we've seen Kansas City play, they've let teams back in. They normally let teams back in very specifically when Vanessa DiBernardo gets subbed out. She doesn't play a full 90, or at least hasn't been, and didn't play a full 90 this match. But normally that's a point which, outside of like Wonder Goals, Worldies, Kansas City lets teams back in. But instead, DiBernardo was on the pitch until the 65th minute, but her coming off didn't really change anything for Kansas City. And I don't know why Vlaco just like put on the handbrake. It was like, oh, Gotham can't score. So yeah, I was very surprised. Also, a big NWSL thing. Why do they keep leaving veterans who can score goals open? Marta's been open twice for her goals. Esther Gonzalez was just open on every single corner. It was hilarious at one point where I was like, y'all playing in a zone and also then not attacking the ball as soon as it comes close to your zone left a player like Esther Gonzalez just like free to freewheel, which one of her narratives, and Andre, you got to stay with me. I genuinely believe she scores from headers because she's 5'5", and the narrative is that she is tiny and 5'5", and still scores headers. I actually think she might be tinier than 5'5", but to me that is full narrative of her only like basically scoring a lot of headed goals being one of the tiniest people on the pitch.
She was free in the box twice from corners, really kind of back to back.
It was actually several times. It was several times. Sometimes it a bad service and it didn't go near her.
Yeah, for the goal, I was thinking like, oh, wow, like Gotham must have ran like a really, because we're seeing this a lot now. Basically, teams, instead of trying to like free up a person who you know is going to be the target, like they're having them make all the movements, it's everybody around that person. So whether you're blocking a runner, blocking a defender, or you're make kind of running interference to have somebody open who you want to head the ball, we've been seeing a lot of that. I was very excited to see like the scheme that Gotham ran to get that space. And then on the replay, I was like, nah, she was just standing there. They didn't really run anything. She was just standing back. And the Kansas City was like, eh, I'm sure it's fine. It was not fine.
She's 5'4 or shorter. It's fine. She won't somehow get a looping header over all of us. Yeah, I was actually very happy to see how this Kansas City team works in person. But I was also like, honestly, like a bit disappointed in how they just scored a goal and then immediately sat back. I was like, that's not, especially when Gotham was like out of sorts at times.
That's so Vlaco.
I like want to try to look back at like 2013, what he was, or 2013 and 2015 FC Kansas City games to be like, did they also do this? Like, is this just like a decade long game plan?
I mean, I'll have to remember certain games, but I know they were very strong defensively, so it's likely that they score. They also, like, those rosters were also really nice.
Yeah. Also, I mean, also so much of that early NWSL was sometimes just vibes. But yeah, those are, oh, Crystal Dunn is still fast. She's just now sneaky fast because you think she got a little slower because she, like, had a baby. I saw Marcel in person. I also saw Kamari in person. And those are two of the cutest kids I've literally ever seen in my entire life. It's ridiculous how cute them babies are. Yeah, those are some NWSL vibes. Why do they leave Marta open also? Like, wide open. Andre, explain it to me.
I cannot. If
I'm being honest, wide open.
I don't know. To be honest, I think I want to do a longer podcast and I don't know how I want to structure it, but I want to talk about like the final third in terms of decision makings, really in attack and defensively. Defensively has been much more improved than the attack so far this season, or at least have better decisions, I'll say, overall than the attack, except for on corners for some strange reason. But yeah, that's for another pod, another time. Courtney, do you have any other observations before we move on?
Yes. Okay. There were VAR checks at Gotham, and they didn't take a trillion hours.
Yeah.
They didn't even send the center ref over to the monitor at all. But they didn't take a trillion hours, and that game was extremely crunchy. You can't start yellow carding people in the 70th minute. You guys are you cannot let that physicality go, because first of all, Bia was bullying people. And I mean, other players were also like crunch tackling each other. The fans started booing Bia, which means she was going into tackles super hard. Which is actually kind of funny. Not her going into tackles hard, but like her reaction to being booed. I was like, she might go full supervillain by the end of the season if fans keep booing her. But yeah, the VAR checks weren't super long, but that game was extremely crunchy and yellow cards needed to happen. And like just calling fouls needed to happen much earlier, like significantly earlier than basically the end of the match.
Yeah, we know NWSL refs are always weird. So I think it is a good thing to call out that VAR checks, apart from one game, didn't take forever. But I hope that the better trend remains and is kind of the new standard, because it was getting absolutely painful to watch some games. And that's not really what you want on a product on very new platforms, or just in general for player safety or the floor of the game. Let's get to the next bit of news. Okay, so when I want to talk about these things, I always feel the need to do the caveat thing and let people know, yes, we are Chelsea fans, but also we can separate that from other things that may happen. So in an FA Cup semifinal, Manchester United beat Chelsea, which was really frustrating because Chelsea did not look like they were awake yet or ready to play, which a lot of the players came back from international break. Sometimes these things happen, but it was very unfortunate. They gave up a goal to Lucia Garcia in the first minute, and then Rachel Williams, basically the exact same play as a carbon copy, looping ball into the box and a free header back across goal, and Manchester United went up 2-0. Game ended 2-1 in the fourth minute of stoppage time in the first half. Neve Charles sent a cross in to Lauren James, who scored. And here's where I want to start talking about the situation, because Millie Turner did a little bit of shithousing and went to grab the ball, because, of course, Chelsea's like, all right, give us the ball. We want to get the game restarted. Let's go. So there was no celebration really from Lauren James. As soon as the ball hit the net, she's running towards the goal to get it. She tries to get it from Millie Turner. For doing a little bit of shithousing, and you know, there's a little scuffle for the ball, and then that's it. Play the game, blah, blah, blah. Chelsea don't score again. Very annoying. I think they had something like 26 shots or whatever. It was very frustrating to watch.
Two missed penalties.
Yeah, two missed penalty calls, which, again, I'm not going to get into that. But after the game, Millie Turner.
Refereeing.
We're definitely going to talk about a different kind of refereeing. But anyway, Millie Turner posted on Instagram with a very all caps caption with "come on," the tennis spelling of this, which is KAMMONNNNs. And it's a 10 photo reel or I guess slide, where one of the photos is a still from the scuffle she had with Lauren James. And in the still photo, it looks like Lauren James has her in a headlock. Lauren James did not actually have her in a headlock. It was basically like she was trying to get the ball and Millie Turner was ducking underneath to really just shithouse and protect the ball so Lauren James couldn't get it. So it wasn't really like that. But that kind of kicked up a whole thing, because it was very, very like, one, Lauren James has clearly made some not good decisions on the pitch. We remember the World Cup, the step, those things. But also we remember that Lauren James has been a frequent victim of racist abuse online.
Wait, Andre, you're missing an important plot point.
Go for
Millie
it.
Millie Turner then posted that Instagram, that final slide, on her Instagram story. So even if you didn't scroll all the way through all 10, which I can't lie, sometimes I look at players' posts, and if I see 10 things there, I'm be like, I'm looking at two and I'm keeping it pushing. She then reshared just that photo on her Instagram story, which also we know that Instagram's algorithm is kind of funky. but you will see people's stories honestly before their posts. And so that even added to it, that it was like, maybe it was hidden because Instagram wants Instagram, but then she added it to her story and put that final slide on her Instagram story. Now continue.
Yeah, that is thank you, because that is an important part of that as well, because it almost seems like an amplification and a re-amplification to say, like, look at this. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but haven't Millie Turner and Lauren James been national team teammates? And not saying that teammates have to get along, but this
I
is just really...
I can't correct you because I don't know.
this is really a bad look for a player. I think that because Lauren James, and really Black player, has been the focal point of a lot of negativity, a lot of racist abuse online. We've talked about it before on this podcast. Other people have talked about it. But I think part of the reaction to this was kind of like that it was, especially from some people in England who I would hope would know better in terms of journalists and whatnot, was kind of like, it's just a silly thing, or, oh, she's shithousing, or, oh, she's just being like, it's banter. And when you, it's not banter when you have the unfair, quote unquote, advantage, quote unquote, of being able to stoke racism towards another player. And whether that was Millie Turner's intention or not, I don't know her personally, so I'm not going to speculate either way, but that's what happens. And did that need to happen? You won the game. There was really no need to amplify that moment. You know you were shithousing. This is a thing that happens. Why amplifying that photo is the question. And then, of course, everything that comes with it, because we have heard and seen from so many other places that, oh, Lauren James is a dirty player. She's a sore loser. She's this and that. A lot of people, you like to use a lot of coded language that really just veils their racism very thinly, I might add. And when you do something like this, not only are you kind of taunting a player that's lost, which again, within the bounds of like sport, I don't really care about taunting. I like taunting. But when it crosses that line and invites racist abuse, and you know that it's going to, it's really unnecessary and a really shitty look.
I've had a lot in my heart about this since it's happened. And I've had a lot in my heart about it for two reasons. Because, and this is not even me being a Chelsea fan, being a Lauren James fan, right? We know that Lauren James is not a perfect person. No one is a perfect person. But we've seen in the past, and I think of notably two incidents. Actually, the World Cup incident, where after about, I want to say maybe a day, Michelle Olozia comes out and it's like, stop abusing her, give it a rest, it's football. And she tries to put it to bed because, like Lauren James, Michelle is a Black woman and recognizes what happens when essentially any Black woman is put in any type of spotlight. Like, I need people to realize and understand that people of color get abused for literally just existing in the world. Like, I've been called a racial slur just for walking, like just existing. And so when you put a spotlight on a person of color, it especially something like football that is fundamentally tribal, and that people are following teams, how they have rivals, etc. I don't care how good your intentions are. You need to recognize the impact of your actions. It opens them up to abuse. And that abuse, you can't be like, and this is what I've seen in, wait, sorry, before I get ahead of myself, I also want to give props to Leah Valti from Arsenal, who also told people, she like quote tweeted a tweet or something being like, thank you for checking on me. Essentially, stop. Like, I never want to share something that will cause hate or cause abuse to someone else. Reading the room of what is happening. And I need people to understand that you cannot separate the abuse from the racism. It is in the way that Black players are talked about. It is in the way that Black players are objectified, the way we talk about them with football, with constantly referring to pace and power, them not being crafty, them not having the same skill, them not being clever, all of the things that are afforded to white players that are not afforded to Black players and players of color. You need to realize when you are putting a spot, and it can even be positive too, right? Like Chelsea tweeting out a photo of Lauren James smiling, England putting out a video of Lauren James getting off the bus, smiling, have a good time before a game. She gets abused for it anyway. Black players get abused for it anyway. Black players get abused for simply existing. And so when Lauren James, we've seen that she is unfollowing a lot of these Manchester United players. And the thing is, like, I get it. You opened her up to get abused. And I've seen so many people online, and actually Andre, your other co-host, Miriam, tweeted about this, and I retweeted it, that, and I've seen so many people online saying, like, oh, I mean, she, it, like, it's all right for her to get criticized, but she, but she shouldn't be abused or racially abused. And I'm like, you don't realize those two things are wrapped up in each other for the majority of people. Not everyone, but for the majority of people, those two things are wrapped up and they cannot be separated. And you would hope that people get it, especially after the World Cup, seeing other players come out and be like, don't share hate on my behalf. Don't send people hate on my behalf. And yet you see it shared on their Instagram carousel and then being reposted on their story and then having other England players go in and interact with it, knowing and seeing that people are coming for Lauren James in the comments. Like, it's why so many Black players don't even actually check their Instagrams or their social media. They have a whole team of people doing it, so that way they don't have to see the abuse that they're constantly put under. And it is so, so deeply frustrating of seeing it happen time and time again, and how when it comes to racism, especially on the women's side of the sport, people still don't get it. They also don't get it on the men's side, but they especially don't get it on the women's side.
Yeah, it's extremely frustrating to see, because, you know, like, it's just like, I want to go back to what you said in your quote to Miriam as well, because I think it was perfect as talking about that you can't separate them. And I think the reason that they can't be separated is because, like, anybody listening, please identify or think of the majority white nation that has put in a considered mass effort to re-educate themselves out of bias, out of racism, out of all of that. Name one, I can't. Okay, so that's just kind of the way it goes. You haven't really had that. So therefore, there's going to be a lot of underlying bias, whether people know it or not. And then joining the people who have the bias are going to be the people who are straight up racist. And what those people will do is use this as a pathway to spew their hate. And they'll end up getting people who may not have those extremely hateful views, but they have unchecked bias, agree with them on stuff that is incredibly racist. And so then you're over here like feeling super targeted as a Black player, or as somebody who's seeing all of this stuff happen online, and you happen to be Black as well. So it's really frustrating to me part of me is like, yeah, if you're not checking your bias, if you're not understanding these things, or if you don't care about them or whatever, as a player in competition, you're not going to think about these things before. But also, that wasn't an incident worth highlighting again. I can't keep going back to that, because you won the game. You're going to an FA Cup final. Why does the cherry on top need to be getting one of the players that lost racially abused? Like, even if you don't think that's going to happen, you see it happening in your comments. You know what's going on. Do you need that? Is that what you intended to do? If not, say something. Do something. So like you said, I don't know. I don't blame Lauren James for reacting the way she's reacting in terms of unfollowing people. To me, that's the least she can do. Like, I'd be pissed off. I'd be like, okay, bet. Next time I see you, I'm crushing your ankles. Not in a tackle, but in a dribble. I'm going to make you look silly. Like, these are things that, like, are super frustrating, and people should understand these things. And we have in women's sports overall, but particularly women's soccer, there are certain things where we can get really behind. Everybody says, all right, yes, we can get behind this. And I'm not saying not to. Yes, you should. But like you said, Courtney, this is also about racism needs to hold the exact same level of cultural frustration, anger from everybody that a lot of other causes do, because it's right there alongside it. You cannot really tell the history of pretty much any country, especially any European country and any American in the United States of America, without talking about racism, Canada too, without talking about racism. And it is just as big of a cultural and societal problem, and it needs to be treated as such and understood as such. And I get so frustrated that it doesn't seem like players, even media, again, media response to this hasn't been great either. From a lot of local UK-based people, it hasn't been great. And it's almost seeming like, oh, it's just a thing, or she's just having fun. It's not fun. Look at the comments. You think those are fun? Like, you think that's part of it? You think this is an okay, haha kind of situation? Like, you're good with that. And I want to ask people that directly and have them answer me directly. Like, tell me to my face that this is fun, because it's not fun. It's fucking disgusting.
Like, it's not just banter. It's never just banter.
Yes. Yeah. Racism ain't
especially banter. With a player like Lauren James and how much abuse she gets consistently. And the thing is, if you even want to bring it, like, I can think of even a player on the men's side in England who are going through also the literal same things. It's never just banter. And it's also, I go back to intent versus impact. Your intentions could have been pure. It could have been a funny ha-ha joke. And yet you see people abusing your England teammate and you don't try to stop it. You don't try to stop it at all. You're like, cool. And like, I'm so, it is just so deeply frustrating also seeing the same things happen again and again and again. And the thing is, it like happened, like it just like keeps like repeatedly happening where it's like, oh, it's a moment of criticism. And I'm like, well, she's going to get abused. Like, she's going to get some racial abuse on this. She's going to get called the N-word. She's going to get called a monkey or something like that. And people are like, no. And it's like, really? Have you read the comments? Have you read the comments? You see the writing on the wall every single time, especially like world football men or women. It's like something happens to the black player. They have a bad moment or something like that. Guaranteed. Or even they have a good moment. They score a goal against your team. Guaranteed at one way, shape, or form, they're going to get racially abused. And so you would hope that on the side of this sport that seems to be more progressive, it would be better. But also, as more fans of the men's game are trickling in, I am not confident it's not also just going to get worse. And it also can't just be the, like, fans of the player or fans of the team that the player plays for calling it out. Because that's a lot of also what I've seen. Is I see a lot of Chelsea fans calling it out. And then rival fans being like, oh, it's your Chelsea bias. And it's like, not on racism. Not on racism.
Yeah. Which is wild to me, because I'm like, it's wild that people in their own minds wouldn't be like, oh, I'm sure these things are very different and can be separated. But like, also, I'm not dumb. Even if you can't separate it, I certainly can. I've been black my entire life. So I know how this works.
A moment since I've graced this earth.
Yeah, every first seconds, even before. Okay, we're actually going to talk about another situation that happens to include a lot of bias. Some of it racial, a lot of it racial. So let's talk about this. Myra Ramirez and Bunny Shaw and the way that they are refereed in the WSL. This is on the back of, again, in that FA Cup semifinal, Maya Letizia had a play that was very bad, was not whistled a foul at all. There's no VAR, so they did not review this.
Why don't
I
they
do
have
not
VAR?
Know as of the time of recording, I have not heard or seen or do not know whether they are or are not reviewing this internally for retroactive punishment or something. I don't know. Haven't heard that they are, so I've got that, and it's been a few days. So, a couple days. Maya Letizia saw a transition about to happen or happening, and Myra Ramirez is running down the center of the pitch. Maya Letizia is a center back for Manchester United. She lowers her shoulder and just directly, without Myra Ramirez seeing her or anything, just blindside hits her. Just a shoulder barge right into like the chest kind of clavicle area. Just a direct hit, and Ramirez is laid out for minutes on the ground. This was not called. None of the referees apparently saw anything like this happen. And it was honestly something, especially seeing the replays, it was hard for me to let go. The game continued as we just talked about, Lauren James scored and all that, but I was still stuck on this moment because like the conditions have been created already in the WSL in England that you can be as physical as you want with Myra Ramirez and you're not going to get the call. If she happens to be physical with you, she will be called for a foul. And what that tells other players is, oh, I can get away with some bullshit. And we've seen the same thing against Bunny Shaw as well, another big player. I think both these players are about 5'10", and they're solid players. And yes, they'd be eating people around because it's very difficult to control those players. They're very skilled, they're very strong, but also you still have to treat them like humans. And a human playing soccer should not get like a...
That was a football tackle. Yeah. It was a football tackle.
Yes, that was the thing. Like in the NFL, that's a flag. In college football, they're reviewing that for targeting. And if it's deemed targeting, you get ejected from the game. Like, I'm not being hyperbolic about this. That was, watch it again, blindside hit, shoulder, right into the chest. You cannot do that. Like, that was so violent and so gross to me. And if they don't punish it, even retroactively... It's just, I honestly don't know. Like, I'm so furious that this happens, but we have seen this in pretty much every single game that Ramirez has played for Chelsea, where she gets to be pulled back. She gets to be, you know, grabbed, pulled, pushed, whatever. And then it escalates and escalates and escalates until something like this. And then even something like this doesn't get called. And it's just like, yo, refs, what's up? Like, what's going on? Y'all serious right now? This is y'all good with this.
And the thing is, the same thing happened. Like, I've watched Bunny Shaw's hair get pulled and no one, like, that is an automatic yellow card and nothing happens. Like, we see these players repeatedly get fouled and nothing happens. And look, I will say, I mean, I brought up the two missed penalties before. Center ref was having an atrocious game. Like,
it sure was.
The handball was, like, really handballing, and the ref was having a really terrible game. Like, I saw moments where also Myra was just, like, pulled back. Like, textbook yellow card moments that also were not called as fouls on Myra Ramirez. Or, like, her getting pulled back, getting hip-checked, somehow keeping her balance, and then doesn't play a good pass because it's honestly magic that she's standing on 2 feet at the moment. And then it's not called back. The yellow card is not given. And it becomes to at a certain point, and we talk about this often in the NWSL, right? Like, when you allow these really, really tough, hard, I mean, I specifically call them crunchy, tackles to keep going, you open up the door for A, players getting seriously injured, and B, like, how many times do we have to say protect the players? That's not just talking about people in front offices, team owners getting abusers out of the game. We also mean physically protect them. We talk about Trinity Rodman all the time and the game she plays and how physical it is and her getting fouled and those fouls not be carded. Fouls not getting, like, people not getting yellow cards for going after her again and again and again and her needing to be protected. The same goes for Ramirez. The same goes for Shaw. Like, and I mean, honestly, across the WSL, we have seen also, like, textbook yellows, textbook reds not get called. Except for that one on Hava Sissoko, which opened her up to racial abuse.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so that's the other part of it, is that, like, any sort of retaliation, like, imagine if Ramirez had lined up Letizia in a similar way as...
Oh my God, they would have... What about the children?
Right. Yeah. If she'd have laid her out the exact same way because she's like, okay, you're going to do this to me, I guess we're doing this now. Then what? Everybody's talking about her being a dirty player. Oh, she's a... Remember... What was it? Build up to the World Cup. They stopped a friendly with Colombia because they were being too physical, right? Which so it's just like, hilarious. And that's a team with Kayden McCabe. Like, get out of my face.
I mean, okay. Remember, where did Mal Pugh tear her patellar tendon in a game against Ireland where she was getting clattered?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's just, it's stuff like this that gets really frustrating. And I think it's just everybody, and we've been begging for generations, white people, to review your bias, understand your bias, factor that in because you are not making fair decisions when it comes to a plethora of things. That can go from housing, it can go from hiring, it can go to politically, and it can go to refereeing. It's all of it. It's whatever. It's a facet of society and where we live that we have to suffer these consequences because people do not think. First, even if they don't believe there's any bias, there's that level of people. People that believe the bias is fair and accurate, we call those racists. And then people who don't know or don't feel like they would do those things. And it's like, I don't really care what you feel like. Like that referee, she had a bad game. But this goes beyond having a bad game. Like, if you miss a penalty call, okay, but you can't miss something like this. You can't not punish things like this
and
towards a player.
That's all the refs, too.
Yeah.
That's not just the center refs. There's going to be time where their heads are turned.
Yeah.
And I know they don't have VAR, which at this point, I don't know why. Get it together.
Because some of their grounds can't handle it. That's the problem. But
yeah. they did have Alex Morgan playing in a cow pasture that one time. But
correct.
Like, there's also a sideline referee that's supposed to be spotting stuff that sometimes the center ref does not see. Like, offside calls. Like, a bare minimum. You also have to see stuff like that. You also have to see stuff like that. Like, that's unacceptable.
And if you don't see it, you need to come out. Like, the video has been, like, it's done the rounds on Twitter. And I know you can't go to Twitter to re-referee a game. But you damn sure, when you see something that violent that went unpunished, you have to review it. And by now, they could have absolutely said, hey, that's not okay. Retroactive punishment or whatever for Maya Letizia, because we can't have this. Like, this, that is wrong. And again, I hope I wake up tomorrow and I see that that was done. And this entire segment of, well, not the entire segment, because everything we said is still accurate, whether they punished this or not. But in terms of, like, me calling this out directly, I hope that this part, it doesn't matter anymore because they actually did that. Do I think that's going to happen? Absolutely not. But I'm just saying, in case it does happen, I want to be able to know that I'm aware and I'm looking for that. And I hope it happens. But it's just like, the message sent is that you can do this and get away with it. Therefore, this player is playing in a completely different, has a completely set of rules protecting them, which are not as strict or not as severe or not as effective as the rules protecting other players who are white, who are maybe not as, you know, physically imposing as she is. Doesn't matter about the physical imposing part. I wrote in the rundown and Courtney had to ask, like, what are the Shaq rules? Because, you know, she happens to be a baby.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. There's enough of that.
You're a baby. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. But basically it was Shaquille O'Neal, when he played, he would have to get like, it would have to be like straight up wrestling move for a foul to be called. Like, it wasn't just like the touch foul. You see now in the NBA, if you just like glance somebody's arm when they're in their shooting motion, that's a foul. It wasn't like that for Shaq because he was big and strong. And so you had to like actually really hit him and stop him from moving, from bringing up the ball for the referees to actually call it. They called it the Shaq rules. And the reason why I brought that up and wanted to mention it on the podcast is because we're not seeing a reinvention of those rules, because it's not even like an intention. Like, these are people who are yes, they're having to do a more severe, or doing a more severe form of fouling. What Letizia did was just violent. That was not a more severe form of fouling. Like, pulling a player back by their shirt, grabbing their arm and twisting them or something, like, that stuff is wrong as well. This was just a straight up violent hit. So this doesn't even goes beyond those Shaq rules. This is just straight up a violent act that was committed toward Ramirez, and we have not seen it. It was not punished in the moment, and we have not seen it punished retroactively. And so the message then again is fair to do. Fair to do.
And when you don't call it the first time, you let it go on the entire game.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if you start guarding them in the 70th minute.
Yeah. That's kind of the thing that's been frustrating to me, is that we've been talking about it ever since she got into the league, because we've noticed that she hasn't been refereed correctly or protected by referees correctly, either one. And we just kept seeing escalation and escalation and escalation. And suddenly this happens. And now it's like, well, damn, what's next? When is she actually genuinely, she already got hurt and missed a few games because of accumulation of hard tackles. But like, what's next? If you allow that, what's the next thing? What, like, honestly, ask yourself, what's a yellow card against Maya Ramirez? What's a red card against Maya Ramirez? It's scary if that's nothing, right? So, yeah. And again, I honestly wish this wasn't like, these two incidences hadn't happened with Chelsea players, because I know some people are going to be like, oh, they're just bitter because Chelsea lost. It's their second like loss in a cup. This season is the final for Emma Hayes. It's not really going the way they want it to. So they're mad. They're spicy. Emma Hayes is mad and kind of spicy in her pressers. But like, no. Again, like Courtney said, we can separate these things. Okay. If this was any other team, any other player, and the same things were happening, we would absolutely be calling it out. I do not like Manchester City, but I will absolutely go to the mat to protect Bunny Shaw, and the way that she is refereed is no more okay with her than it is with Ramirez. And I know some people are just going to keep believing it's a Chelsea thing, but I guarantee you, and I would hope that over the course of this podcast and our body of work, people would know that that's not the case.
It's absolutely ridiculous. These players need to be protected.
All right. Do you want to move on to Heated and Hyped?
Honestly, I can't. Well, yes, even though that was kind of part of my heated, because that has been weighing on my heart for like 2 days.
Don't worry. I've got some other things for you to be heated about, unfortunately.
I know. It's some stupidity on Twitter.
Yeah.
Let's run it back.
Let's talk about some heated and hyped. I'm kind of going to do something a little different. I'm just going to throw out some things that I think, don't want to speak for you, but I think that there's some heated and hypedness around the WNBA. First of all, I want to start with the hype. The WNBA draft, it was dope. I think I saw, what did Claire Watkins report? It was 2.4 million people watched the WNBA draft, which was the highest number since 2004 when it was peaked at 600,000. So slight bump.
Wait, did you say that broke my brain did you say its previous max was 600,000 and it hit 2.4 million?
I was actually wrong in remembering. Oh, well, 2.4 million watched the draft. There was the previous draft record was 601,000. This is according to Claire Watkins on Twitter, who does a good newsletter and the podcast, The Late Sub. 601,000 in 2004. So again, 20 years ago was the previous record for the draft. And the largest WNBA audience for a game was a Liberty Comets game, hashtag bring back the Comets, that averaged 2.74 million in 2000. So this was the second largest event in WNBA history, and that's really kind of dope. 2.45 million to be exact.
That's insane.
Yeah, it was super fun. The fits. Oh my.
The fits were fitting.
I feel like in a lot of ways, so like I don't want to transition quickly to heated, because I think there's a lot to celebrate about the WNBA draft. Like, first, it was extremely dope. The venue looked dope. It looked like it was orchestrated well, a well-run program. It was also a little interesting because it felt like you didn't really get the who are they going to take kind of deal. Like, that wasn't really it. It was kind of more of a TV show with some intermittent like selections in between where they got to talk about like the ones that they expected. And then they went to commercial once and then came back and were like, oh, these five people were drafted while you were gone. And it's like, damn. But I thought that like the event was dope. The fits were dope. I thought like just the overall like celebration of that moment and for it to be centered around women's sports, in particular women's basketball, which has had such a difficult time like trying to avoid all the bullshit from like your average American sports fan, male American sports fan, and taking a shit on women playing basketball, women really doing anything, but basketball in particular. Like, women's soccer has been allowed to exist because it gave people a lot of pride, I suppose, on the national stage. And the women's USA women's basketball does the same thing, but it's majority black, so you don't really get that, right? So this is, again, going back to racism. Sorry, this is supposed to be hyped. Again, though, it filters into everything. But, like, it was just such a cool moment. I had, like, the Mystics kind of confused me. I thought they were going to take Angel Reese, and they didn't. But I like Aaliyah Edwards as well, so I'm kind of excited about that and how they're going to build Aaliyah Edwards and Shaq Austin. Make me happy. But yeah, like, it was just a really cool moment to talk about like the basketball and to see like the players and to also see Holly Rowe get her head cut off because she was on the screen because she was talking like
6'4"
Cam Brink, who was also wearing heels and probably did like 6'7", 6'8". So like it was a great fun moment. That screen cap did like 1,000 retweets on Twitter. It was amazing. But like, yeah, I thought it was just an all around really dope moment. And I like how it happened so soon after the college national championship, because I do think that you have to be more connected to the college game. That really helped the NBA, and the NBA doesn't have that right now. So when people are talking about like, oh, I didn't even give a shit about the men's March Madness, I know some people are like, that's not really, like, you don't only care about women's sports when like the men's sport that you want isn't good or isn't doing what you want it to do or hasn't grabbed you in a particular way. women's sports can like stand alone on their own and without being contrast to men's sports in that way. But like, I do think it was really dope to do this. So people, the name recognition rolls right into the professional ranks. Like, you love this player. Cool. Kaitlin Clark, she's on Indiana Fever right now. Learn everything you can about them, because the season starts like in a month. Like, let's go. And I thought that was an incredibly smart thing to do. And I liked it a lot, especially the quick turnaround for all those players. They got to like feel the hurt of not winning a championship, everybody who didn't play for South Carolina. And then they got to be celebrated in kind of like their next step. I think it's dope. I just was watching the whole thing last night and it was really, really cool. And I was like, again, this is Andre. I hate drafts. You know, me, I still thought it was a dope event.
Yeah. My only thing about it, though, is that the players that got drafted, it was literally like, and I mean, to be fair, they all didn't all make it to like the very end of the tournament, but it was also like a cool. You won a national championship. Cool. Here's the draft. Guess what? Season starting in like 5 weeks. And it's like, yo, can these players have a moment, like have a week to chill?
Fair.
Which is something that was pointed out to me. I was like, oh, the WNBA is back. Oh, wow. It's like really back, like really soon. No, seeing the fits and seeing all the name recognition has been awesome. But Andre, you want to know, I'm just leading us into our heated. You know, what's been deeply frustrating to me is the narrative surrounding Kaitlin Clark's salary.
Yeah.
Now, before declaring for the WNBA draft, there were numerous, and I mean numerous, stories about how Kaitlin Clark would be taking a pay cut to go pro instead of staying in the college game. First of all, no, she wouldn't. She wasn't being paid by the University of Iowa.
Right.
First of all. Second of all, do you lack so many brain cells that you think her NIL deals are just going to dry up when she likely, and now confirmed, goes number one in the draft? Do you think she's not going to get sponsorship money? Also, this is the first time she's being paid a salary. She wasn't being paid a salary before. Right. And on top of that, she also now has healthcare and benefits, which is also, I mean, I'm assuming she probably had some sort of healthcare in college because like you have to, but like the narrative that she's taking a pay cut, or all these clickbaity articles I've seen being like, look at her salary, look at her salary, look at her salary. While this is also in the face of WNBA player since the WNBA started, which I'm 95% sure the WNBA started 1 year before MLS. So like, it's been around for what, 27 years, 28, sounds about right. These players also have been asking for more money, advocating for themselves of why they should get more money, why their game should be put on more like on TV, having better marketing, all this stuff to make the people at the top more money. So that way, they can have higher salaries and all that stuff. And all the people in the comments, I'm talking about stupid people on Twitter being like, these women don't deserve more money. Look at how much, like, look at their ratings compared to the NBA, blah, blah, blah. Even though I'm like, hey, do you remember that the Final Four, the women this year is the most watched basketball game on ESPN ever. Anyway, so it's like, don't forget that. But also they've been advocating for themselves through CBAs and stuff like that to get more money. So then you can't then be like, you don't deserve more money, and then poke the finger at someone like Kaitlin Clark's rookie salary to be like, look at how much she's being getting paid. Isn't that ridiculous? It's stupid all around. It is so extremely stupid, and it makes me so frustrated. And it's like, women can't win, especially a lot of Black women can't win. You're constantly being put in the middle of, you don't deserve more money, or like, look at this. What do you mean she's being paid that? And it's ridiculous. Also, I haven't seen, to be fair, also that narrative about any of the other college players that were drafted. Not a single one about any of the other players. And it's like, they're still on rookie contracts, but also these players weren't getting paid by their universities. They're not taking a pay cut to go pro. And now that also they're pro, they now have even more bargaining power at the table with their endorsement deals. So please be serious, get some reading comprehension, and then do some reading.
Yeah, I think for me, I'll add two things. It's actually very, very telling and fitting for especially everything that we've been talking about on this episode, that people would want to protect poor Caitlin Clark's checking account suddenly, right? When Black players were a majority saying like, hey, we like the flight thing isn't really working out for us. Like, this is not really how you do things in a professional league. This is bad. Oh, look at your ratings. You think you earn more? You think you deserve more? So all the racist bullshit is now hurting your little precious Caitlin Clark. And I want to say that because I want to caveat, I like Caitlin Clark. I think she's dope. The worst thing about Caitlin Clark are the people who use her name to peddle their other bullshit. Facts. That's the worst thing about her. She, on the other hand, seems dope and seems to actually have a genuine love for the game and respect for players who came before her. But the reason why the salary is what it is, which is low, if you look at it, yes, it is low. But again, like Courtney said, she didn't have a single cent of a salary at Iowa. So yes, it's low. Yes, it should be raised. And the next time somebody tries to, the CBA is coming up. Next time players try to say, hey, bigger piece of the pie, like we need to raise the salary floor. We need to raise the rookie scale as well. We need to raise the top end of earning for this game. Because again, Brittany Griner was playing in Russia and got locked up because she was trying to supplement income from the WNBA. Like, this stuff is, it's been a problem for a while. And it hasn't really been under the spotlight until people think that somebody like Caitlin Clark is so good, she deserves so much more money. And it's like, well, we've had a lot of really good players who've tried to say like, hey, we deserve more money, and they get shouted down. And then people elevate the dumbness of people who want to go and say, well, they don't deserve this or that. We saw that again with the U.S. women's national team's fight for equal pay as well. It's just a lot of really ridiculous, misogynistic, and in this case also combine the racism part of it for Black players in the WNBA who have been mostly the face of the WNBA, I would say, except for not publicly, because the WNBA and other outlets try to elevate white players because they understand that America's racist. Doesn't really work. Anyway, the other thing I wanted to say is when people do this about NIL, I laugh. And the reason I laugh is because NIL has the acronym has become like its own separate thing to some people. It stands for name, image, and likeness. When you do an endorsement or a sponsorship deal as a celebrity, what the fuck do you think they're paying you for? It's because they want your name, your image, and your likeness promoting their product or endorsing their product or at their promo event or whatever. It's the same thing. So of course she's going to have more of that. It's not going to be called NIL because that's a college thing, because college players weren't allowed to be paid. And we found a loophole with it to make it work for them to be paid. But now that she doesn't have to do that, anybody can give Caitlin Clark or any other player any amount of money they want to for their quote unquote name, image, and likeness for whatever purpose they agree to, right? So like, it is really, really silly to me for people to just think like, oh, she ain't gonna get that NIL money. Stop, just stop it. Like, marketing wise, it doesn't make any sense. You don't know what you're talking about, because all it is a player saying, hey, I'm famous. Do you want me and my famous face in your commercials or at your event? And the answer for Caitlin Clark and a lot of these other players will be, yeah, we'll give you a lot of money to do that.
It's literally so stupid. And also they're like, deals as professionals are like, I guarantee are probably going to be bigger than their games as college players. Why? Because they just announced a broadcast deal. The majority of them games are on ABC, ESPN, CBS, CBS Sports Network.
Yeah.
Like, they're on big networks. You're naturally going to get more visibility. Yeah, I also really need people to, Audrey, you actually stole the point out of my mouth that I was going to hop in and shout it from the rooftops of like, why do you think Brittany Griner went to go play in Russia? Why do you think these WNBA players are going to play abroad in their off season? Because the money is there and they need to supplement their incomes. And so this, like, the whole thing is just so extremely stupid. And continuing on the extremely stupid is some extreme stupidity coming out of Brazil, even though it's now, I'm going to say it's now 10%. I think it's fair to say 10% less stupid. For those who don't know, a former coach, actually now officially former coach of Santos named Clayton Lima, was recently reinstated to be coach of Santos, a team out of Brasileiro Feminina in Brazil, in their league. In his first game back, Santos was playing Corinthians. For those who know anything about Brazilian football, those are two huge rivals.
Yep.
The Corinthians players protested during the anthem, where they all cover their mouths, and 19s on both teams, actually, Corinthians and Santos, turn their back, because 19 players came forward to talk about the abuse they suffered under Lima by Lima.
19
players. These protests continue throughout the Brazilian league. Players from other teams, I know Palmeiras, players were doing it. Players across the league were protesting his reinstatement. The fact that you were reinstated when 19 people came forward to talk about the abuse they suffered by you is ridiculous, but unfortunately not all shocking for women's soccer or women's sports. But then, in recent days, so these protests happened, I believe, Friday or Saturday night. But then yesterday, it was announced that he asked the board to step down, or for them to basically remove him from the post. It's like kind of the rough translation of it. And so he's now technically, you know, he's been removed, but it's honestly really ridiculous that this had to happen in the first place. One of his justifications of why he should be allowed to coach again is that he did nothing, quote unquote, legally wrong. When you use a phrase like "I did nothing, quote unquote, legally wrong," you just know you shouldn't be right. Doing whatever you're trying to do. Okay. No. And so 19 players came forward. There are a few letters, or 19 players came forward, wrote letters. I would not recommend that you read the letters. They're extremely graphic. They're extremely heartbreaking. And the reason why this is heated, normally this is a thing where like, oh, bad person gets out of the game, we should celebrate it. But the fact that he was, A, they didn't quote unquote find anything from this, the investigation. They said in their, when they were, like Santos said, when they were reinstating him, that they had reached out to current and former players to talk about his behavior, and they were all okay with him being reinstated. Those players came out and said, you didn't contact us at all. And so the fact that he is technically being allowed to step, quote unquote, step down instead of being removed and fired is disgusting and ridiculous. And the fact that there were 7 months of investigation and yet you couldn't find anything when 19 players wrote you letters, even if you didn't reach out to those former players, the fact that 19 players wrote letters about the abuse they suffered by him, and you're like, he's fine to go back to the women's game. It's disgusting. And again, I feel like we've been banging the horn on or banging the drum on this episode. Protect the players. It's disgusting. And just power to the players, like power to them for protesting, for making a lot of noise, hopefully getting this guy out of the paint for good. But it's absolutely ridiculous and disgusting that he was let back in the first place.
Yeah, it's him being let back. It's them saying, quote, that the letters that were written after he left the club due to the allegations, they brought him back because they claimed the athlete's arguments were, quote unquote, fragile, and the allegations were, quote unquote, untruths. That's a translation from DiBradores, who reposted, I think, the original photo or the original video of multiple players participating in the protest, which is really powerful if you look at it. But again, it's like, why are players having to do this kind of thing again? And the fact that even this wasn't enough, it was really him who was just like, all right, I guess they don't want me here. I guess I'll leave. And it's like, why? Again, it's his decision. Like, yes, he's not there. That's great. But also it's his decision. So players know you weren't backing them up at all. In fact, you were going to let him stay there in the face of all of this protest. And it was his decision to say, you know what? No, this seems like a bad idea. It's really, really frustrating. And I absolutely hate it and don't know why. Like, I guess in the grand scheme of things and the way this world works, I kind of know why these things happen, but it's just incredibly frustrating that it gets to that point of 19 players come out and write letters about something and they're not believed. What else can you call that besides straight up, you know, like a not caring about the player's safety, not caring about women, not caring about the abuse or anything that the letters state? Like, how can you just not care about these things? It honestly doesn't make any sense to me. And it's extremely frustrating that players have to then take the initial step, not only deal with what happened to them, they have to take the initial step, the extra step of organizing a protest and trying to signal to the entire world, hey, we're being mistreated here. And I love the women's soccer community because anytime we see anybody really with that's being abused or being mistreated, we elevate it. And so I saw the tweets, multiple outlets that I saw, big outlets and big Twitter accounts, tweet and post the video, retweet it, repost the video, and offer their commentary. So yeah, a lot of pressure was put on this particular situation. But for fuck's sake, why does it always have to come to that? So, okay, we are going to very smoothly transition to Hyped.
Could be the bumpiest transition of all time.
So smooth. because there it's tough because I like to end the podcast on a positive note. This is why we always kind of do the back and forth, heated and hyped, but we spent so much time in heated that it's just like a really tough transition. But
and technically our hyped was a WNBA draft.
That's true. I maybe should have held that. But I think there are some things to be hyped about. Barbara Banda has finally shown up in Orlando and their past networks really look like they need her, which is important.
I mean, shout out to the people of Orlando, though, because they welcomed her in open arms. And it was
they
did.
They were at the airport. That was so cool. She said today in the presser that she didn't expect that, which is just a really cool thing to do for a player coming, especially to a brand new country. I mean, I know she left Zambia, played for China, but coming to the States is a very different thing. It's a lot. And it's really cool that people were there to support. I saw some Zambian flags as well. So I thought that was really cool just to try to make her feel more at home and comfortable in a completely new setting. So that's really dope. And I'm really excited to see her on the pitch. But yeah, that was just like the video really warmed my heart because it's like, this is what players deserve.
They do. They deserve to be celebrated. I hope Barbara Banda scores a trillion goals against everyone except for Gotham. And so I don't have to experience that pain in person of watching an absolute fave score against a team I cover. But yeah, I'm so happy she's here, but also Orlando was so happy she's here because they have deep, there have been so many times where I'm playing and I'm like, you just need someone in the box. You just need a goal scorer in the box who's going to score a lot of goals. And it's like, now she's arrived. So yeah, shout out to Barbara Banda. Really, I was honestly almost went down to Orlando this weekend. And then I learned I had to be at work at 10 a.m. on Saturday, so it was going to be physically impossible. However, I will make a trip down to Orlando because I also just learned that Disney World has gluten-free beignets, and I think emotionally I need that in my life. So, fair excited enough. Barbara Banda's here.
And the last thing we'll be hyped about is the Women's Champions League semifinals, the leg one, are this weekend. I'm shooketh, but it's going to be fun.
I don't know if I'm excited. I'm nervous.
If you are on the East Coast, Saturday at 7:30 a.m., why?
Goodbye. No.
Why? I don't understand why, but Saturday at 7:30 a.m., Barcelona and Chelsea play, apparently in Barcelona. So that's just, so that's going to happen. And then the second game is going to be 1 p.m. that same Saturday, Lyon and PSG play. So leg one's coming up. We're getting close to the end of seasons and the end of these big competitions. So the game should be extra fun, extra tactical, extra spicy. And it's kind of like, you know, this is where legends are made. And I'm kind of excited about it. Like when players step up in these big games, it's always cool to see. So even though I remain shooketh, we will know within a matter of a couple weeks who will be in the Champions League final.
Why is that? But also, why is that like a 1:30 p.m. kickoff in Barcelona? Like, put it at night.
Yeah, I mean, it should be, yes. I don't know why these games are on the weekend at all.
I mean, that too.
Yeah.
That's also foolish. Put that midweek. Put it midweek.
Yeah. All the other games are midweek except for these, which I don't really understand. But that's another conversation for another time. They are coming, and these will be very interesting and fascinating games. And of course, we will talk about them next week. Courtney, anything else before we get out of here?
Protect the players.
I think that's a good place to end the podcast.
You don't want to buy?
Yeah, let's get a buy.
Bye. Thanks for listening to Diaspora United Podcast. Please subscribe and rate and review us anywhere you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Diaspora United Pod, that's Diaspora UTDPOD, and message us if there's anything you want us to talk about in our next podcast. See you next time.